Hi, I'm Miles, and today I'm here with Assistant Professor of Geophysics Eric Dunham, who's also an affiliated faculty with the Institute for Computational and Mathematical Engineering. Thanks for coming into studio today.
Thank you, Miles.
Recently, you won the Excellence in Teaching Award for the School of Earth Sciences. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And from all of the nomination forms that I could get my hands on, it seems like the students were really focused on one class, which was your ice, water, and fire course. It seemed to be the most popular one. Can you briefly, like, sort of take us through that class? What does it cover?
Sure. We look at three different systems. We look at the ocean, water waves in the ocean, from everything from the waves that you see at the beach up to tsunamis. We look at the ocean tides, and we move from there into volcanoes and the fluid mechanics of volcanic eruptions and magma flow beneath the surface. And we close with a look at ice sheets and glaciers and how they flow. What we really do in the class is we learn the language of physics and mathematics and how to quantitatively describe these systems. And what we find is that all of these systems, there's some fundamental physics that describe all of them.
Are there any like parts of the course that the students just seem to like pick up on right away, like, yeah, we got this?
I think the example that really strikes them comes, it's probably in the second week of class where we've set up the basics of water waves, and then we take it to very long wavelengths, which describe tsunamis. And suddenly we make calculations that explain why the waves generated from the 2011 Tohoku earthquake, the one in Japan that damaged the nuclear reactor there, why they had the amplitude that they did, why the waves were that high. Why did it take 15 minutes or so for the waves to reach the coast? And these things emerge from very basic principles that, you know, in a one or two classes, the students understand them at some level. And then all of a sudden they can, you know, I kind of guide them through it in the lecture and we draw some pictures. And suddenly they're, you know, I ask them, well, how long will it take the waves to get there? And they do a little quick little calculation themselves and they get the right answer. Yeah. That earthquake actually happened, I guess the evening prior to when the final day of class one year. So instead of having the prepared lecture, we came in, we learned all we could about the earthquake from what was available on the web, and we calculated the tsunami travel times. And sure enough, an hour or two after class ended, the waves came, hit Crescent City, hit
wow.
Santa Cruz. So it was really an interesting way to close the class, where the students saw that skills that they had gained could be put to very practical use.
One of the things in your courses that you do that I've never heard of anyone else doing outside of a language class is an oral midterm.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe what that is?
It's one of my favorite things to do. It is a 30-minute conversation with me, one-on-one in my office. The students are at the blackboard writing out equations, drawing pictures, talking about their understanding of different problems. So students pick up a set of questions, mainly conceptual in nature, about 30 minutes prior to this oral midterm. And then we get started. And it really is, it's a conversation. So I pose certain questions to the students. Very quickly, as they start to respond, I can see and gauge their level of understanding. If they get hung up on something, I can give them a hint. I worry too much that in the written test-taking form, if you just somehow have a mental block and get stuck on something, you might not be able to proceed, when really you have the knowledge there. You just need a little bit of a push to unlock it. And so in that oral midterm format, I can give them that little extra hint, and suddenly it jogs their memory, and then they go. And it's actually a fun experience. The students are often extremely nervous at the beginning, but then they realize how much they actually understand.
And again, going back to these nominations and just hearing you talk right now, one of the things that kept coming up was that this guy is clearly a physics nerd, and I love it because I'm a physics nerd. I love this stuff. Where did you get hooked on physics? Because it's not something that sort of everyone seems to have an appreciation for, but not everyone has like that really nerdy passion for it.
I do have a passion for it. I spent a lot of time outside, and I spent a lot of time hiking and backpacking and really just observing the natural world. I went to graduate school in Santa Barbara, so I spent a lot of time on the beach watching the ocean waves come in, watching streams flowing into the river, interacting with the water coming, the tides coming in and out. And I just noticed things and was curious about why did it look like that? You know, outside there's really spectacular clouds yesterday and today, these periodic ripples of clouds in the sky. And to someone now trained as a physicist, I immediately think, well, there must be some kind of instability that's setting a critical wavelength. And, you know, but I guess growing up, I would just see these things and I was curious about what it was that led to this really interesting natural phenomenon. And the thing that was so appealing about physics was from really just a few very basic principles from there, from that framework, build out and suddenly have answers to why the world is working the way it's working. And you don't have to memorize thousands and millions of different molecules. I had problems with chemistry. you know, I just love both the simplicity of it, the elegance of it. I love the mathematics behind it, the language that you use to quantify things. And then it was just so powerful to explain the behavior of the world.
How did the geo part of geophysics enter your sort of life?
Coming out of undergrad, I went to University of Virginia, where I was a physics major. And at that time, I was really interested in what was the most fundamental of the fundamental of physics. And it was particle physics and string theory and such things. And in graduate school in Santa Barbara, as I was exploring that, I started to lose that conceptual understanding of it. And at the same time, I ended up taking a fluid mechanics class in engineering. And suddenly, it was this night and day contrast. All of a sudden, I could visualize the system in the fluids class. I could understand what was happening. I could really, it felt very tangible.
Do you remember the name of that professor by any chance?
Ted Bennett was the one there. The other person that was extremely influential for me, both as a scientist and as a teacher, was Lars Bildsten. He's a professor in physics at Santa Barbara, an astrophysicist, who taught a class informally known as Stars with Lars. and it was such a different style of thinking and problem solving than any I had encountered before. So instead of setting up these very rigorous initial boundary value problems and grinding through all the Bessel functions and spherical harmonics and such things to get some answer, he took really complicated system, the star, and wrote down some equations. And then instead of solving them exactly, he showed, okay, well, we want this process or, you know, balancing this one, and we can develop this scaling relation. All of the basic physics was there. And it was just so eye-opening. You know, suddenly, okay, you can make this approximation. It's okay. You can, you know, very quickly you realize that you can solve this huge class of problems that, sure, the mathematics is going to be formidable, and if you really want to solve it in full rigor, you've got to do it on a computer numerically and computationally. But that doesn't mean that you can't get a lot of insight into that system and start to make sense of it. And so I really learned from him that way of tackling problems. And it's much those same type of skills that I try to teach in the ice, water, fire class and in my other classes.
So moving forward from here, you know, it sounds like every class that you sort of teach, you sort of throw in a new thing, a new element, something that maybe you're interested in or that the students might be really interested in. Do you have any ideas, like sort of moving forward, how you picture this class evolving?
Well, there's a lot of things that I'm personally curious about. I want to understand better the formation of the marine layer, the fog that drifts in and out here in the Bay Area that spills over the mountains. I want to understand that at this same very basic, very intuitive level and really distill it down to those to a level that is accessible to a beginning undergraduate student with some background in physics. I want to bring in earthquakes. There's so many things that I'm not getting to teach at that undergraduate level that I'd really like to share with the students. And so probably it will mean creating new classes and that cover these topics. It'll give me the opportunity to learn it and then share that learning process with the students.
It's great. Well, Eric, thank you so much for chatting with me today. This is great.
Thank you, Miles.